is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
100 years since the end of the First War. 100 years of transition I learned from Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, from the British Empire and to what we have now, which is some form of the American Empire under transition. In that 100 years, of course, it included an event that is significant in my lifetime, 1944, the landings on Normandy, June 6, 1944. But that was part of the transition. We're watching a world that right before us from the 20th century to the 21st that is now, if I read Gregory correctly, in an interregnum. Gregory, a very good evening to you. What was the system then, and what is it transforming into that we can measure now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, we're moving definitely into an unknown period right now. World history has only seen two real global domination systems. The first was Pax Britannica, which emerged through the 18th, 19th century and into the beginnings of the 20th century. And that transitioned in a fairly orderly fashion to Pax Americana, Pax meaning peace, obviously. And of course, we've seen over the course of human history, many regional pieces, Pax Romana, Pax Sinica in under the Han Dynasty 2,000 years ago, saw regional operations in Central Asia, for example, and elsewhere, which could have been called Pax Sovieticus, and so on. So you've got all these periods where peace or control over large swaths of the world, and in the case of Pax Britannica and Pax Americana, the entire world, these are imposed by the dominant power. Now, it was clear as the 19th century was ending and the US economy was expanding so rapidly at the beginning of the 20th century that the 20th century was going to be the American century. But what made it definitive as it progressed into what is now Pax Americana was that the United States dominated the world's supply chain. It dominated the seaways, the airways, and space in many respects. So it dominated, therefore, economically and in terms of keeping the peace. And what we started to see over the past 20 years or so were U.S. and allied officials talking about the rules-based world order. Great phrase. And it made you think that this was something which had been decided by some great council in the sky where the rules of international law and so on had been decided and this is how we all behaved. Well, the rules-based world order is something which is created by the dominant power. You know, as the old saying goes, he who has the gold makes the rules. That's the golden rule. So these regional pieces and these global pieces, Pax Britannica, Pax Americana, did a very effective job of ensuring safety on the seas, safety of trade and the like, so that if you wanted to buy and sell goods on the international market, that was going to be fairly safe and regulated. You knew your goods were going to, you know, reach you or your exports would reach their markets. That is coming to an end because the United States is losing the ability to control the entire global system. And it would always have had to have come to an end, not just because empires and dominant powers generally have lifespans of about 250 years, but because the global system, which came to be under Pax Britannica and Pax Americana, created such wealth around the world that eventually the share of the global economy and the global technological capability grew in other countries. So whereas at one stage the United States was overwhelmingly the largest economy, overshadowing literally a combination of all the others, it's now contracted in proportion to the rest of the world, to the stage where other countries are challenging the U.S. supremacy.
I just want to make sure I understand. The rules-based order gave prosperity to everyone. And in doing that, it meant that the rules-based order was no longer adequate or no longer served all the new powers.
No, it served them. But the fact is that the U.S. could not continue to enforce it single-handedly because it no longer was the overwhelming economic power. Other economies grew and took a larger and larger place in the world.
And the rules-based order that was in the 20th century is what we're moving away from. Or are we moving for a new name for rules or no rules?
We'll go through an interregnum. We'll go through a period between pieces. I'm calling them the interpax years, the interpeace years. We keep thinking in our mentality that we'll look at interwar years, but the wars determine who controls the peace. And that's been the case. World War II cemented the United States as that premier economic and logistical power, the power which could control the waterways, the seaways, the airways, and the like. And that power to control that is declining. So something else will arise. It may be that we will not come up with another global rules-based world order. We may have, as we did in the past, in the pre-Pax Britannica period, we may go back to certain regional powers dominating their region, but not controlling the whole world. For example, Beijing and the Communist Party of China wants to create a new Pax Sinica, a Chinese peace to dominate the world. And they basically said they would do this by 2049. That seems highly unlikely because the Communist Party of China is unlikely to last until that time, and certainly not, even if it does survive, will not have the power to control the entire world. But it may control sections of the Eurasian continent, or it may control parts of the Far East, as did the Pax Sinica of the Han Dynasty 2,000 years ago. So, but before we reach anything, we may see this great period of squabbling and lawlessness, a decline in organized global trade. We started to see, as we defined it in at Defense and Foreign Affairs, a decline in globalization. In about 2008, it was becoming less the norm that global trade was going to dominate the economies of most countries. And we've seen that. We've seen that decline proportionately in world trade, the decline in individual economies. So we're seeing a contraction of countries back into their own national or regional spaces. And that's hard enough to manage without trying to manage a global situation. So we may see an interregnum, a period of relative lawlessness or no rules on the high seas or in the skies. We're certainly seeing a decline in the impact and effect and authority of the United Nations, because the United Nations was literally put into place by the victors of World War II. Right. To dominate the new peaceful era of peace.
What does it mean to call some part of this empire the West? Does that exist, or was that a romantic idea?
Well, it was certainly a romantic idea, and there were certainly some common values which were seen, but nobody can be sure what all of those common values were. Was it Christianity? It was partly the case. Was it literacy using Latinized script and Latin-based language to a large extent for that matter. But it did create, there was a sense that there was a common set of general values which were not complete because the Western states themselves had major disagreements and major wars. World Wars I and II were literally wars within the West. But as early as 2015, 2017, we saw the emergence of that great study by Spengler called The Decline of the West. And we saw that it was not something which happened overnight, and it's been progressively happening according to the lines laid out by Spengler until today. And of course, it did have something to do with the reality that these common values created a common wealth where trade flourished, technology flourished, and the like. So, yes, that dream of the West is disappearing. And literally, as with any past history, it's not something which can be rediscovered. We'll never return to any golden age. No people will. We can have a golden age in the future, but it'll be very different. We've been transformed by our experiences from that golden age, going through our struggles and the like, going through the acquisition of new technologies and the like, new capabilities. So the West would always, like an empire, have had to change both in real terms and in mythical terms, and that's what's happening. So the question is, what do you want the West to mean, the concept of the West, and what do you wish to preserve? And as with any goals you might have in a society, these have to be defined specifically by a government or by a people as a national grand strategy. You have to say, well, these are the values which we want to preserve or attain. This is how we're going to get there, and this is what we're going to do to protect those values and also to project those values. But right now, what we see in what we used to call the West, including the United States and Western Europe and the UK and the like, and Australia, even Japan, is that nobody's doing any planning. Nobody has defined what it is we want for our society. We see lots of bickering about, well, you could call it rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg, but we don't see any long-range, visionary, and noble ideals for the future. We see a few writers or philosophers who come up with concepts as to what mankind should do and what rules they should live by, but we see in modern philosophy none of the great enduring nobility of the philosophers we've seen going back into antiquity in Greece and Rome, even into Persia and even into China. Those long-term ideals are disappearing. And in fact, the concept of ideals and nobility has basically left us and begs the question as to whether you can revive any form of civilization if you don't have ideals, which gets us back again, not only to defining what the West means, but what does the concept of civilization mean?
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, reflecting on the transition, the interregnum, the interpax we are living in. And part of that living takes us to Africa. We're turning to Nigeria next, a troubled country. I'm John Batchelor.